Welcome to the Let's Clear the Air Energy Podcast. Conversations focused on how some of the world's top energy leaders are innovating to deliver clean, affordable, and reliable energy for the future. Your hosts are energy and climate expert Dr. Andrew Parker and midstream industry veteran Adam Murray. Now, here are Andrew and Adam.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the latest episode of the Let's Clear the Air Energy Podcast. Today, we are honored to have former U.S. Senator Mary Lee Andrew. During her 18 years in the Senate, she chaired the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee and was a powerful advocate for balanced energy policies. Now, as a co-chair of the Natural Allies for a Clean Energy Future, she is working to promote natural gas as a key solution to achieving cleaner energy while ensuring economic growth and energy security. With her extensive experience in public service and energy policy, she's here to offer unique insight into the future of our energy sector. Senator, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Adam. I really appreciate the opportunity to join you guys and talk a little energy this afternoon.
And I'll echo the welcome to the podcast, Senator. And we always started off with a little icebreaker question. And so you being an LSU alumni, I've got to ask, let's clear the air. It's a good time to be a Tiger. LSU sports are doing great. Baseball, basketball, gymnastics, football. Which team do you follow the most right now over in Baton Rouge?
Andrew, go Tigers. That's all I can say. And as a longtime politician, I follow them all. You know, it's the women's basketball has been so inspiring, of course, over the last years. And, you know, our football team, I mean, our stadium, I don't know if you've ever been to Death Valley, but you want to go supporting our team and not with the opposition because it's it can be pretty intimidating. It's packed and lots of folks come in and, you know, the game's fun, but it's the tailgate before the game. You know, people flog in there on Friday night. We're cooking everything from alligator to all sorts of things. And it's just a lot of fun. It's a great school with a lot of spirit. And I'm really pleased on the point here, just looping in here, represent the LSU Energy Innovation Center, which is really starting to step out and help lead. Of course, we've led for many, many years, huge petroleum engineering school, et cetera, et cetera. But leaning on some carbon sequestration technologies and methane reduction technologies, et cetera. So, yeah, the school has a lot to offer. And I think they've educated, that school has educated about 24 Landrews. My brothers, my sisters, my nieces, my nephews, and then we're sending some great-grandchildren there soon, I'm sure.
Love it. Love it.
That's awesome. Yeah, I have been to Tiger Stadium, and it is by far the best food in all of college football. But that goes for, I think, the state of Louisiana in general.
We do. We love our sports, and we love, and you know what I love a lot about it as a feminist myself, is that the men do most of the cooking, which makes it even extra special. Because the women, we can just sit around and be lazy bums, and the guys do all the grilling and the cooking. And, you know, it just really is kind of an amazing tradition. And you're right, it is delicious. And so anyway, it's been fun to be a part of that family now for many, many years.
Well, we can bring some energy into that. I'm sure there's some propane tanks on those boilers and barbecue grills out
and
there.
And natural gas, we just go right up, you know, turn on the pipes and get it going.
There you go.
Well, we could talk about football and food all day, I think, but let's cut to the chase. And what I'd love for you to maybe start off for the listeners who don't really know what Natural Allies is. Maybe share a little bit about the organization and what its mission is.
Natural Allies is a relatively new coalition alliance of a broad range of different kinds of organizations. It was started by midstream pipeline companies. Alan Armstrong, the CEO of Williams, was the lead, but we have, you know, TC Energy, Enbridge, et cetera. But we also have labor unions that are part of our organization or alliance. We also have contractors that are non-union part of our alliance. We have NAM, National Association of Manufacturers. And most instructive, we have American Clean Power Association, which is the largest association of wind, solar, and hydro projects and nuclear and batteries in the country. And they've joined us because our message, yes, it is to promote natural gas, but really it's to say, to promote the concept that natural gas should be part of our climate solution. And we believe that we, working together with renewables, solar and wind, working with hydro, partnering with nuclear when necessary, is a message that the American people really need to understand a little bit better. And I think that would be open to this message. According to the polls, a majority of Republicans and Democrats understand that natural gas is accessible, that it's available, that we've depended on it to keep our utility prices low, our electric grid more reliable. And this issue of reliability, particularly, as you all know, is coming more and more and more into focus as there are more rolling blackouts and brownouts in different parts of the country, mostly in the coastal areas, but not exclusively. And also the prices are so high, you know, in California on one side, Massachusetts, let's say, on the other, because they're restricting the use of natural gas. Over-reliance on wind and solar that are intermittent sources. I mean, obviously, in kindergarten, you understand this, that the wind doesn't blow all the time. The sun only shines a certain portion of the 24 hours. It's just the way the world is. And so you've got to have something in the stead when, you know, the wind dies down and the sun, you know, sets. And that is right now, natural gas primarily, unless you want to go back to using coal, and we can talk about that. But so that's what our message is, look, we want to be part of the climate solution. We are part of the climate solution as gas replaces coal, our grid becomes cleaner, our emissions are reduced, and we want to partner. We don't want to compete with wind and solar. We want to partner with them, and they need us as much as we need them.
It sounds like that's a big bite to break off, right? You're talking about the entire energy grid, national California to Massachusetts, you know, on the policy side, which you definitely get into. What are some of the challenges that Natural Allies is addressing, and how are you advocating for those?
Well, the first thing we like to tell everyone or share with everyone is that the U.S. has reduced its greenhouse gas emissions faster than any country in the world. Absolutely. They say, oh, how is that possible? You know, I'll tell you how it's possible, because we literally started shutting down our coal plants and using natural gas, which met the target economics and the price. You know, we also had rules and regulations in various states and federal government that discouraged the use of coal, because it's very hard to mitigate against those emissions. But natural gas, there's strategies to reduce methane. There's also strategies for carbon capture. So we can, not only is gas 50% cleaner than coal, so you're eliminating your emissions right away by just the substitute, but now we're also through the IRA and through the infrastructure bill, prioritizing carbon capture and sequestration, where you can either sequester the carbon underground safely, permanently, or we have new technologies that you can use the carbon to turn it into some sorts of products that you can then sell and use. So it really makes a tremendous amount of sense. And a lot of people just hear fossil fuels, and fossil fuels, and I don't blame them, they get confused. What I'd really like to challenge all of our listeners and everyone to understand is our mission should not be to end fossil fuels. It should be to eliminate harmful emissions. Those are two distinct, different goals. And I think that we are misled and are pushed to try to make decisions if our goal is eliminating fossil fuel. That sounds good. It fits on a bumper sticker, but fossil fuels run this world and have for 100X years, will continue to do so. We need to think about reducing emissions. And we have the technology to do so. We have the bandwidth to do so. We have the political muscle to do so if we would all get aligned, you know, with the right mission. And, you know, a friend of mine shared with me recently a quote from Albert Einstein, and he said, he was asked once, if you had 1 hour to solve a problem, how would you go about doing it? And he said, I'd spend the first 59 minutes understanding the problem and the last minute solving it. Now, if Albert Einstein, who's the smartest person, like maybe in the whole world, says that, I think we should listen to him. Mm-hmm. And the problem, again, is not fossil fuels. It's the emissions from fossil fuels. So that is my big message to people today. And we can reduce, you know, fossil fuels. Coal is the dirtiest, then oil, then gas. So let's move, you know, use less coal, less oil when we can, use more gas, particularly to substitute for coal, not just in the U.S., you guys, but globally. And then my other message, and I'll stop for a question, is when people in America say, you know, put fossil fuel, you know, stop using fossil fuels, leave them in the ground. All that's going to do is drive up our electricity prices, drive up our commercial power prices, make our economy weaker, cause people to be even angrier than they are now about high prices. And even if America was net zero today, it would have just a flicker of on the global scale. This is a global problem. We need a global solution. So that's not to say that America shouldn't lead or we shouldn't do as, you know, as much as we possibly can. But to think that our job, that's another thing, identifying the wrong problem. Like people say, oh, well, America has to get to zero emissions. No, the world has to get to net zero, not right. just America. And so let's focus, understand the problem, focus on it. And that's why I'm so excited about Natural Allies and our sister organization, PAGE, Partnership to Address Global Emissions, because we are focused on, we think, the right problem and are offering many different solutions and are open to partnerships with others.
I think your point about it being a global problem is something that not enough people in the United States appreciate, right? We're 10% of the global emissions profile. If we went net zero tomorrow,
right. you're we barely would have a negligible effect. The hurricanes aren't going to stop if we went to net zero. The storms that just ravaged, you know, Asheville, and it just breaks my heart having survived and lived through and led through Katrina. I understand what the mayor of Asheville is going through right now and how just devastating it is to watch a city that is otherwise idyllic, you know, Asheville, yeah. North Carolina. I mean, it could be in the movies. I think it is in the movies. And to watch it just destroyed, keeping fossil fuels in the ground in America is not going to help. The opposite will actually help, if you bear with me a minute. Getting our natural gas out of the ground in America, building more pipelines, letting us export our natural gas to Japan, to China, to Europe, does three amazing things. It reduces global emissions. I want to say that again. Exporting natural gas to these other countries reduces global emissions because gas, when we do export it, 70% of the time, it replaces coal. Number two, natural gas in other places can support the growth of renewables in those countries. Japan doesn't have a lot of land like we do. They don't have any natural gas. They're going to, you know, they shut down some of their nuclear plants. They have a challenge, and we can help them what intermittent sources they can get from wind and solar. They also have a lot of mountains. So the intermittent sources, we can help them, you know, with their gas. Same thing with Korea. So we reduce emissions. We strengthen our national security. We help Europe wean itself off of Russian gas, not just for the next decade, but permanently. Russia is a predator, and they are not a democratic nation. They are a predator, and Europe needs to wake up and really understand what's at their doorstep and get themselves energy independent with their allies that they can count on, like us. And I think they're on the track to do that, but there's still a lot of challenges. So, you know, and the final thing, unleashing our LNG, natural gas, and building more pipelines keeps our electric rates lower and keeps our grid more stable. So Andrew and Adam, tell me, what am I missing? Like, check, check, check.
What?
Works for our economy, it works for our national security, and it works for the prices to keep our prices low. And yet you hear these voices all the time from the left wing of the Democratic Party, and they're not following the science or the economics.
This is a perfect spot to ask about the ICF study that Natural Allies commissioned, right? Because misinformation is a major part of the what you're talking about. And there were studies out there saying, whoa, LNG is worse than coal. And Natural Allies
by Hogworth. I mean, that, you know, it's hogwash by a professor named Horwath from Cornell. And let me say why I know it is, because we commissioned Natural Allies and Page a study from ICF. ICF is one of the think tanks and go-to analytical institutes that the EPA uses. I mean, we went to the trusted source of the government and asked them to do the study, and they basically came to the conclusion that it was not peer-reviewed, he was using faulty information, it was not factual. So the question is, to me, why did the Biden administration take one faulty study off the shelf and use it to make such a consequential decision, when we could point now to the ICF study and 10 other studies, and I will get our staff to send those to you so you can put them on your website so people can at least link and see that what we're saying is the truth. And so I tell my team that we want to follow the science. We are true climate believers. We're not deniers. We are not here to promote the industry. That's not Natural Allies' job. Natural Allies' job is to try to find the fastest path forward to lower global emissions and recognize the role that American natural gas plays in that effort, period. And we are not going to use faulty science or made-up baloney, but the Biden administration basically ate a bologna sandwich. And that is not right. And I most certainly hope that, you know, President Harris, Vice President Harris, if she's elected, will review this and look at the science. Ernie Moniz, who was Secretary of Energy, you could ask Stephen Chu. I'm sure Stephen understands the science behind this. Rick Perry, Dan Brulé, those are all four Secretaries of Energy, Republican and Democrat. And I think they would verify what I'm saying. So if we want to be successful and really try to meet our goals, we need to have good studies, good science, and then, you know, use that to guide our work. So I'm hoping that that terrible decision will be reversed. It's been reversed by the courts, as you know, it's been stayed. But we need to send more gas to the world, not less, and we have it to send.
So, Senator, as you work with the alliance to have these conversations with Japan, with Korea, with Europe, and muddy through this misinformation and these studies that are funded, you know, by maybe people who have ulterior motives, you know, what are you seeing? Is there pushback overseas, or is it all internal kind of self-regulation that we just keep, I don't know, hurting ourselves, for lack of a better term?
That's a good question. I can just tell you that everyone I've spoken to from Japan and from South Korea understands exactly what we're saying, and they want to partner with the U.S. I mean, these are extremely important strategic partners for us.
Absolutely.
In our competition with China. And they need American natural gas. And if it wasn't for their contracts with American gas and they diverted it to Europe, Europe wouldn't have been able to get any natural gas. But because Japan and Korea, who had the contracts, were able to sell it. Now, yes, they sold it for premium, and Europe ended up paying more for natural gas than they would have if their politicians would let the people contract with us. We could deliver it to their shores much cheaper. But, you know, they are in la-la land over there in some of these countries in Europe. They think they can close down nuclear. They think they don't need natural gas from America. They think they can run their whole economy on wind and solar without long-term storage, which is really what gas provides, the backup, peaking power, and storage. You cannot run an economy. So you see what's happening in Germany. Some of their big industrials are closing down and moving to the United States. They want reliable energy that's cleaner and gets cleaner every year. They know the price will stay stable or get lower. They are not going to put up with that left-wing foolishness that's moving around Europe that not only undermines their economic strength, it really hurts their national security. And for the life of me, I cannot understand what they are doing to their people. So we say here in America, and I work with Democrats and Republicans, I am very proud to have built with my partner, Carlos Curbelo, former member, Republican member from Florida, the first, well, it's not the first, because he built the first one and it went away. So we rebuilt it together. Bipartisan Climate Solutions Caucus. And we help our Republican members and Democratic members kind of understand, A, we really have to address emissions. B, the U.S. can lead. C, let's lead with natural gas and a renaissance of nuclear, which is quite exciting. Now, there are complications with that. We can talk about that in a minute. But I'm encouraged, at least what I see happening in America. I continue to be really worried about some of the paths that Europe is taking. But it's been a wake-up call for them. I mean, and they can't continue to pay these high prices. They can't continue to rely on Russia. So I think we're going to see a waking up and an appreciation of the export capacity that we have to help them and help restart some of their nuclear facilities, which they really need to do.
I was having a similar conversation with somebody. I was at an industry conference earlier this month, and I had to remind them that I sit here in Dallas-Fort Worth area, that Dallas-Fort Worth alone has a higher population than Norway, Ireland, Finland, Denmark, and that's just one metroplex in the United States. And so whenever
that's an amazing statistic. Continue. I want you to say that. Repeat it. It's so worth repeating.
Well, everybody wants to be like these countries that may have 80% hydro or, different types of energy or whatever, but we're dealing with 330 plus million people, probably 350 million people now here in the United States. And the volume of people and the volume of energy is just hugely different.
It's hugely different. And, you know, and you're exactly correct. I mean, that is just I always say, look at Houston. Houston has 6 million people. Right. That's more people than Louisiana and Mississippi, almost more than Louisiana and Mississippi combined.
Yeah.
You know, just in Houston. And Houston is probably larger than so many countries in the world. And why would we be listening to these little countries? Let's listen to the giant country, which is us, the strongest democracy in the world, the strongest economy in the world. We have the best scientists in the world. We have the best engineers in the world. Why are we doubting ourselves and listening to people who have made some tragic mistakes like Germany? Tragic. Yeah. So that's our message. And we are so grateful that we have this resource. And we realize not every country has natural gas. You know, there are only 6 or 7 in the world that do. So I'm not saying that we can just run the whole world on natural gas, but we can really use it to replace coal over the next couple of years, get our emissions down globally, and then be thinking of new exciting things like nuclear, small modular reactors, you know, new traditional nuclear. There are lots of exciting opportunities. Now we have mineral issues. We have sourcing issues for those minerals, which we do need to deal with. But we also have some really amazing technology, fusion, which the guy that's running one of the big, you know, operations in our country, he told me just recently, he said, Mary, just think about a star in a box. I said, well, look, when you get the star in the box, please sell me one. I would like to.
Right.
So, but, you know, that's what it is. You know, it's that's what the stars are. It's trying to channel that energy to, you know, help us power the planet. Now, that's not here today, but it's coming. And it's just going to take us some time. But leaving fossil fuels in the ground is a death knell to our economy. It doesn't make sense from a climate perspective. It doesn't make sense from a scientific perspective. And it's political hogwash. So we've got Texas, Louisiana, Oklahoma, Kansas, the Midwest of our country, Ohio, Michigan has a story to tell about what it's going to take to support this growing economy we have, and natural gas is at the center of it.
Yep.
Another state that has, I think, a story to tell we often forget about is Alaska. You mentioned the markets in Asia that would just love to have American natural gas, and yet you've got the Trans-Alaskan pipeline that's operating at about 25% of its capacity, and that state is incredibly regulated. The fact that we're not building export facilities in Alaska right now, it breaks my mind.
It's just crazy. I mean, it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. No. And if there was a substitute for it, you know, I could understand them saying, look, Mary, we have a substitute. There is no substitute. And so it's a multiple, we can't just, climate is important, yes. But you also have to focus on the economics of things and the national security implications. Or you could be in the same position as Germany, like one day somebody just turns your lights out and it's game over. Right. So we need to be energy self-sufficient ourselves in America. Yep. We need to press hard on new cleaner technologies. We need to move absolutely forward on carbon capture and sequestration. And new technologies like direct air capture. I happen to represent Van Ness Feldman. I represent multiple clients. One of them is Climeworks, which is very exciting. It's up and operational in Iceland. And these are entrepreneurs, intrepid entrepreneurs that think they could create a big vacuum cleaner and suck the bad stuff out of the air. And eventually at a reasonable price, they can do it. They're proving it. It's operational. It's just very expensive. But so what? So are our first televisions, and now prices have come down. Yep. So that's the same concept, but it's risky for these people to put their capital behind things. That's why the government is supporting it. But that's exciting technology. And then geothermal, we haven't talked about, but that's just using the heat that's under the ground. But we need petroleum engineers to help us with that. And we need people from the oil and gas industry to show us how to really use more geothermal. So I'm not a one-trick pony here, but I am a follow the science, stop wrecking our economy, stop driving up our energy prices, and let's use our, you know, God-given resources of natural gas until we can get to these new, more, cleaner and more cost-effective, perhaps, solutions.
So one other state that has, I think, a lot to say in 7 weeks is Pennsylvania, massive swing state in the election, massive gas producing state. So if you would maybe indulge us with a little bit of your election analysis and really curious what your thoughts are with respect to what's going on in Pennsylvania.
I think Pennsylvania has been a very good classroom for Democrats running for office, because Democrats in Pennsylvania need to really understand the damage that they cause themselves politically when they say, let's not use the natural gas we have. And people are like, what? Why? I'm not voting for you. So they can't say that. And Vice President Harris has changed her views on fracking, thank goodness. And look, I understand that. When you're a politician from California or from Massachusetts, you see the world differently than I do. I'm from Louisiana. I see the world differently. And there's no criticism of that. But when you run for president, you're no longer representing California. You're representing the whole country.
Right.
And you have to learn all the different things that go on in different parts of the country and try to be as fair as you can. And that's what she's doing. She's smart enough to recognize that she needs to, you know, grow and change. Unfortunately, you know, Donald Trump does not. He thinks he's perfect every day and is never sorry in his life and doesn't learn anything as far as I can tell. But she understands that. So I think it's been good. Chrissy Houlihan's also from Pennsylvania. She's the Democratic chair of our bipartisan, and she's a strong climate advocate, but she's come to really appreciate and understand the importance of natural gas, again, to reduce our emissions. So for Democrats who want to reduce emissions, natural gas is a really good thing. For Democrats that want to strengthen their economy, it's a good thing. For yep. Democrats that want to see, you know, energy prices stay stable and lower, it's a good thing. And I have a chart here, and I'll just, it's a little dated, but I have a chart from the, let's see, energy government. This is from our government, you know, database. And in 2021, Massachusetts of the lower 48, Massachusetts had the highest cents per kilowatt hour at 25 cents. California had the second highest at 25 cents. And then think about Louisiana at 10 cents, Tennessee at 12 cents. People in California are paying high prices, and it's because they won't drill for their own oil and gas. They want to import it, then they won't put the pipelines in to get it, and they want to run everything on wind and solar. And while wind and solar can be cheap in some circumstances,
yep.
you have to pay a lot for the peaking power, or you can have really cheap solar, but your electricity will only be on for 12 hours a day. Good luck with that. And sometimes when the sun goes away for days, you just have to sit in your dark house. I mean, that is as simple as it is. And people are not processing this correctly. Right. So I'm like, okay, you got to have something. So, oh, we have batteries. Well, batteries only last now like 2 to 4 hours. We need a lot more battery strength. And then you have to talk about where you're getting the minerals for batteries, since yeah. California won't let anybody mine anything. Can't get any lithium from California. They don't want anyone to mine anything anywhere. So I'm not sure how this is going to work for the people of California. But I know Louisiana and Texas, we're doing the best to keep our lights on. We've had issues. I know about all the, you know, not, I don't know all the details, but I understand Texas has struggled with your, you know, with getting your grid to be reliable with, you know, Storm Uri.
Massively influx of people.
Worked out, I think it can be worked out.
So, Senator, it sounds like you're feeling like the message is being heard, though, sort of regardless of the parties in the upcoming election. You think the smart people in the room will speak up and guide our leadership? Is that sort of what I'm hearing from you?
Well, this is what I think. I'm not 100% sure of that, but this is what I know for pretty sure. The industry has finally decided it wants to help lead this effort. And I mean industry writ large. Exxon, Shell, Chevron, EQT, Williams, most of the midstream pipeline companies, most of the big producers. The industry has finally, and this happened at COP this last year, where they showed up in larger numbers. They weren't even invited in the past, so I didn't blame them for not showing up, because the NGOs and the environmentalists don't even want to talk to anyone in the industry because they consider them the enemy. That's not understanding your problem. These people are not the enemy. Did some of those companies drag their feet for years? Yes. Did they deny science? Yes. But that was ages ago. Now the companies are leaning in, and the petroleum engineers in these companies are, like I said, are some of the smartest people on the planet. If you just direct them and tell them what you want, they can pretty much find a solution, as you all know. So I know for sure Oxy, Dow, BASF, petrochemicals, manufacturers all over the country are starting to lean in because of two things, honestly. The IRA is a big driver because President Biden and Vice President Harris shaped such a phenomenal piece of legislation. It's incentivized a lot of these companies to invest in these new technologies because they can make money.
Yep.
And money makes the world go round. And so I'm not saying that it's all, you know, out of kindness and charity of their heart. But the way the world works is it needs to pencil. You know, the economics of this has to work. And these companies are figuring out the world wants greener products. It wants a cleaner atmosphere. People may pay a premium. That's a question. How much will people pay extra for it?
Yeah.
But the companies are starting to figure out, and they believe, and they're right, that America is in the best, absolute best position in the whole world for our industrial base to compete. China's a big competition. Russia's nothing. It's a threat, but it's not an economic competitor. China is our competitor. And if we can keep our eye on China, then we can build a fabulous industrial base here. That's, I'm positive of. So if the CEOs like Toby Rice and Alan Armstrong, and I want to give a shout out to Mike Wirth, who spoke at Gas Tech. He did a beautiful job, CEO of Chevron, outlining this. If they keep speaking out the way they are, I think we'll get there.
I always found it questionable, particularly that if you're going to talk energy, why wouldn't you have the leaders in the energy world involved?
Exactly. It's like trying to transform the fishing industry, but you don't invite any of the fishermen. I mean, it just makes no sense. That's why it's so frustrating to me as a leader. And I understand back in the 1970s, I got an office in 1979. I was 23. I remember the 70s, the 80s, how, you know, the environmentalists were raising the alarm and everybody in industry was saying, oh, we had nothing to do with this. We had nothing to do with this. Look elsewhere. That's 100 years ago. We're talking 2020 now, 2024. People are in a different place. The science is clear. Yeah, there are some really interesting pressures on everyone to get this right. So I'm like, let's everybody get to the table and let's not exclude anyone. And let's really try to put our heads together. And most importantly, which is what I'm doing a lot of in Washington, is building bipartisan support in the Congress for this. So if Donald Trump gets elected, he can't just throw the baby out with the bathwater. And if Kamala Harris gets elected, she just can't go crazy to the left. You know, building a core center, it's hard work. And there are very few groups doing it, but we think we're having an impact.
So speaking of building that consensus, Senator, you and I are both involved with a fantastic nonprofit called the Energy Leadership Institute, ELI, which puts on a leadership development course called NGEN for about 25 executive level emerging energy professionals. And right now, we're in the peak of recruiting our next cohort for 2025. So if you would maybe share some of your thoughts and some of your input on if people are listening and they want to learn more or maybe apply, what are they going to get out of that program?
Well, it is a really exciting program. I mean, I wish we had funding, you know, to support 100 or 200, you know, fellows, but it's 25 or 30 mid-career leaders in the energy field, and it could be wind, solar, nuclear, oil and gas, all the above, pipeline, utility, you know, anyone in the energy industry that's excited about the future and wants to be a part of shaping it could apply. And it helps the men and women in the industry to learn about how political policy shaped in Washington. And it's an eye-opening experience for some of these folks that, you know, came out of graduate school, top of their class. They go to work for the industry. They come to Washington. They're like, what in the heck is this town? You know, what are they doing?
Yeah.
Well, let's try to explain it to you, you know. So we help them understand. And then it also helps the staffers here in D.C. and members to understand who some of these young people are in this industry. And it's not your grandfather's oil and gas industry anymore. And these people want to be part of the future. They want to build a brighter future for themselves, their children, their grandchildren. They want to reduce global emissions. They think they know how. And so what we do, Andrew, is help them to find their voice and to help them understand how, you know, the political regulatory system works here and political advocacy system. And I'm really happy to, you know, volunteer my time to be in the group. And I've been very impressed with the classes that I've met.
Yeah, it's a high impact group. It's got some great sponsors behind it. Phillips 66, JP Morgan Chase partnered with the University of Colorado and Stanford University as well. So, we would love to have, as you said, Senator, funding to have 100 or 200 people in each cohort. And right now we've got 25, and we're incredibly grateful for that support. And certainly if people want to learn more, reach out to Senator Landrieu or myself on LinkedIn. I'm easy to find and love to have a conversation more about the NGEN and ELI platform. So Adam, I'll let you take it home, being respectful of time, and you can ask our wrap-up question.
Yeah, Senator Landrieu, thank you so much for being here and joining us and spreading your message. We like to end all of our episodes with the same question. So this podcast is 3 years from now, and you're back on with us, and you're happy. What has happened over the course of the past 3 years that has caused you to be happy, and what are you looking forward to?
I'll be happy if we can get 3 or 4 or 5 more natural gas pipelines built in this country. We desperately need to move the gas from where we can find it, like in the Marcellus and in the Permian and Haynesville, and move it to the places in the country that need it, to Americans that want cheaper, affordable, cleaner electricity and want it 24/7 when they need it. I'd also be happier if we could find a regulatory breakthrough on nuclear, so we're actually rebuilding our nuclear fleet. Yeah. And we've figured out some issues with our supply chain for minerals. Those would be really significant breakthroughs, because like Bill Gates said, the world is starving for more energy. I mean, there are 2 billion people that still burn wood and dung, animal dung, to, you know, heat their homes. It's a shame. It's atrocious. And we need to be lifting people out of poverty, and we can, but it's really, I think, one of the most exciting challenges in the world today is how to build an energy system that continues to meet demand, with that demand increasing. And we haven't even talked about AI or the data centers, which is a whole nother thing.
Right.
But just the organic growth of the world, and do it while lowering emissions. And we're not going to do it by keeping fossil fuels in the ground or putting our heads in the sand. We need to focus on the science, focus on technology, bring everybody to the table, and use everything we have, eliminate no fuels, but just focus on reducing emissions. And I think the world will get, hopefully, going in the right direction.
Okay. Well, thank you again so much for your time and your input and your thoughts. It's greatly appreciated. Andrew, any closing thoughts?
Yeah, no, always, whether it's at NGEN or getting to talk to you like this, it's always energizing to listen to your thoughts, Senator, and appreciate you taking time out of your day to share it with
our listenership.
Well,
thank you all for getting the message out there, and it's really an important one. So God bless you guys, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you all again.
Thank you for listening to the Let's Clear the Air Energy Podcast with Adam Murray and Dr. Andrew Parker. If you like what you have heard, subscribe and rate us on your favorite podcast app. You can email us with questions or comments to Let's Clear the Air Energy Podcast @gmail.com.